on the second floor of the library. It's going on from 3:30 to 5 o'clock p.m. today. Go by. And for more information, you can go to the library.humboldt.edu/about/HSU authors. Stay tuned for Art Waves with Wendy Butler.
Thank you for tuning into KHSU, and this is Art Waves. I'm Wendy Butler, with two interviews today. Later in the program, the director and two of the actors in Redwood Curtain's latest production, Emily La Marquise du Châtelet, defends her life tonight. First today, it's good vibes. The trio is composed of Mike LaBolle, Matthew McClyman, and Jonathan Kipp. The excerpt you are listening to is Good Vibes performing a song titled For You, Mom and Dad. Each of the three men is on his own vibraphone. Good Vibes will play for Wine and Jazz at the Morris Graves Museum of Art in Eureka this Sunday, February 19th, 3 to 5 p.m. And I've got them in the studio with me. And we begin with Matthew McClyman. The composition, For You, Mom and Dad. Now, I do want to talk about the three of you as composers, but in this particular case, you did not compose this piece. Who did?
This is written by Bobby Hutcherson.
And who is that?
He's one of the great jazz vibraphonists of kind of the generation after Milt Jackson, so kind of post-bebop, coming to prominence in the 1960s. So this particular composition was written in the 80s. And the original record he composed, layering himself, playing various mallet instruments, including marimbas and vibraphones and even chimes. And he layered it over and he soloed and accompanied himself. So we kind of stole that arrangement from him. Yeah, it's a real beautiful tune.
All right, so there's that, but the three of you individually do compose music, and I'd like to start with Jonathan about how you approach composing music.
It's always different, and it's usually based on who I'm writing for. I find that I'm a pretty contextual person, and it's hard for me to write music without a project already in place. Otherwise, I'll just write music for myself. But so when this happened, then I got ideas for things and started orchestrating parts for that. I just wrote some music for, in fact, you might have had her on the show, for Zuzka Sabata.
I have in the past, yes.
For her play, Seek the Secret Life of Sponsa.
Oh, okay.
And I wrote, yeah. She asked me to write some music for that. And so, like, that music was all pretty much, like, electronic art music, and it was all context-specific, like the... so her play is all about the Mojave Indians, and so I tried to... I took field recordings of wind and grass and took some recordings of shakers that I made and things like that, and but it's always different. It depends on the project.
And so Matt, I wanted to ask you about composing as well. Do you, you know, what do you compose for? You know.
I have a handful of tunes that I've written for kind of a jazz context. So I wouldn't say that's my main focus, but yeah, over the years I've kind of compiled a few tunes, and I brought one of the tunes to the to the group for this project. I thought it'd be good to have one. We were kind of all represented with our own originals. In terms of how we kind of conceive of composing.
How do you approach
our process.
It? Yeah.
So I was just thinking about this particular tune that I brought. It's called Press and Marais. That's a cross street in New Orleans. When I was studying down there, I went down there to study jazz. And that's kind of a neighborhood I lived in. I worked in kind of the same kind of, it was a couple blocks from where I lived, and I worked down there. It was near the French Quarter. So that was kind of partly the inspiration, but then also, the nature of the tune is based on a jazz standard, called It Could Happen to You. So I was kind of interested in, the tradition in jazz of taking a standard form from a kind of a popular, show tune type form, jazz standard, and rewriting a melody over it. So it's been done frequently throughout the history of jazz, so I wanted to kind of make my own take on that. So that's what that one is for us. Yeah.
And the three of you will be playing the vibes to
yes.
that.
Mm-hmm. And absolutely.
Along with the bass and the drums.
Yes.
Will be included in that as well. Jonathan, I didn't ask you this. You there's something original of yours that you made for this concert, yes?
What did I bring? Oh, there's a few. So I made kind of like a Balkan style tune. And let's see, what else?
The bread.
Oh, the song of bread.
The song of bread.
Uh-huh.
Like bread, the group, or bread we eat?
Oh, the bread we eat.
Oh, okay.
And it's sort of, that's a freely improvised tune with a very open, suggestive score. And what else is there? There's a minimalistic tune, sort of in I don't know, like a Steve Reich or Terry Riley tradition, sort of. Are there any more? Is that all of them?
Three,
I think so. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's one more that I had in the works that maybe for a different project now.
And Mike, same question more or less for you: how you approach composing, and then what you're bringing to this concert.
As far as composing, several different methods, but see, one of the pieces I brought, I wrote a long time ago, in the 80s, and it was just because I was here at HSU studying music and kind of engulfed my hearing in Balinese music, and then I just started improvising. This is my usual path, as I get something going on in my head and my body, and then I go play. And what came out was a Balinese-sounding piece of music. So I notated a little bit of it. But it's something I've only played by myself, never brought it to anybody else to play. So it's kind of a work in progress.
Let me ask all three of you this. Did you all three go through formal training? Formal music training? Like, let's start with Jonathan. What kind of formal training did you endure?
Yeah, I have a degree from here.
Yeah, here being HSU.
HSU.
Have you always preferred percussive instruments?
Oh, yeah. When I was thinking about playing music when I was little, I wanted to play the trumpet because of that theme from Jurassic Park. When the helicopter is descending.
Don't remember that one.
But and now that I look back on it, that probably would have been a whole lot easier. but here we are.
You mean easier to play the trumpet?
Oh, easier to haul around. You know, just have one little case.
That's true.
now every instrument that I play is huge and breaks down into multiple heavy cases. And
well, why did you prefer the?
That's a good question. I can't actually remember why I started playing drums.
So drums definitely came first before the vibraphone and
I think I started playing vibes in college, second year of college. A friend of mine who was from Taiwan, he was an engineer for the city and he got laid off, and he was a vibraphone enthusiast and wasn't the best at it, but he did it all the time, and he had all these pieces for it that he'd accrued, and he eventually had to move back to Taiwan, and when he did, he gave me all these pieces, and I looked at him, I'm like, that's enough to play a recital with. And so I went to my teacher the next semester, and I told him basically that what I wanted to do that semester was this, to play this recital, to work on all these pieces. And he looked at me and he said, you know, Tien is moving back to Taiwan and he's selling his vibraphone, and if you're going to do this, then you need to buy it. And so that was the beginning of this experience for me.
How about you, Matt? Where did you learn music?
Well, Mike actually was my first percussion teacher. So
that was drums?
That's pretty cool. Yeah, so I took drum set lessons, and he actually showed me some stuff on vibes too. So it's kind of coming around full circle here. But yeah, and then I too went to HSU, studied with Eugene Novotny. Did the program percussion performance. And then that's when I moved. After that, I moved to New Orleans to study, because I was getting pretty heavy into jazz. So I thought that would be a good move. So I lived out there for a while, and then I came back later and did a music education credential at the University of Louisville in Kentucky. So now I'm teaching, but that's kind of the path I took. In fifth grade band, I started on trumpet, and then around high school, that's when I came to Mike, and I was thinking about kind of trying percussion. And then I pretty much switched over after that.
Another person left the trumpet in the dust.
Yeah.
For some reason.
A lot of commonalities here, yeah. So, but I kind of knew. I did mallets the whole time. So like mallets as in, it's kind of shorthand for vibes, xylophones, marimba. So I had when I started percussion, I had basically a drum pad and then a xylophone that I borrowed from Fortuna High. And I started there, and then I think the next thing I got was a drum set. And then when I got to HSU, I finally eventually got a vibraphone.
And so, Mike, let's think back.
Yeah, let's keep the commonality thread going. I started on a trombone, but I quickly switched to trumpet from there. So, and I still play my trumpet, but it is a tough instrument to maintain, to be a really good player.
But not to carry.
Not to carry, though. It's actually, I've got a shoulder strap case now, and it's really easy to carry. And that's what I finished at HSU as well, with a music ed credential, and I've been teaching mostly elementary school music, but I've taught K through university, every single grade level.
Now, are you still teaching?
No, I just retired. So I'm on my second week of retirement. The first week I was sick. That was great. Let's see, though. In junior high school, I was playing the trumpet in the school band. I was adjacent to the percussion section, and it looked like a lot of fun. So I asked my parents, could I study percussion while I'm still playing trumpet? And that was fine. So I got the sticks and a pad is all I had, and took a few lessons, and then I got a drum set, and playing the drums made a connection in my mind to music. had never fully connected. I loved playing my trumpet and playing music, but when I played the drums, I heard all the rest of the music in my head. So that now I was connected. You know, I wasn't, as a trumpet player, I was just hearing the trumpet, you know, and really didn't know how it fit, you know, into everything else. But as a drummer, I my brain filled in the rest, and so it was really cool. I was playing with an orchestra in my head.
Michael Abol. You also heard from Matthew McClyman and Jonathan Kipp. The trio is called Good Vibes, and they will be accompanied by drummer Brandon Rainbolt and bassist Danny Gayon for their performance for Wine and Jazz at the Morris Graves Museum of Art, 636 F Street in Eureka, this Sunday, February 19th, 3 to 5 p.m. The final half hour will invite the audience to join in a jam session. Information available at 442-0278. I'm Wendy Butler, and this is Art Waves on KHSU. Redwood Curtain presents Emily, La Marquise du Châtelet defends her life tonight by Lauren Gunderson. It's Thursdays through Saturdays at 8 p.m. through March 4th with one Sunday matinee on February 26th at 2 p.m. My guests are director Catherine L. Brown and actors Alexandra Bluin and Charlie Heinberg. We begin with Catherine's response to my inquiry about the play's title.
Well, it's her name. It's the way her name was spelled. This was a French woman, a real live for real person who lived during the Enlightenment, who was a major mind in the field of physics and mathematics. And that was her name, Emily. And she was married to the Marquis de Châtelet. And so she became the Marquise du Châtelet, although she was a noble woman on her own side to begin with. She had her own nobility, her own money, her own family that she came. She came from the court, the royal court of France. Some people think that she is the intellectual, scientific mother of Einstein.
And I bet you've never heard her name before.
I have never heard her name before.
I wonder why. Could it be because she was a woman? Could it be because the only way she got anything published or recognized at all was because, number one, she had the money to get her own stuff published, and number two, she was the lover of Voltaire?
I've heard of the name Voltaire.
Yeah.
What did she publish? What sort of science was she in? What did she explore?
Theoretical physics.
Good.
And, you know, there are sections of this play that are really sciency, and you can just kind of feel the audience listening.
It gets real mathy in the middle there, which I know because I had to learn a number of Leibnizian equations to write, well, I'm saying other math-related things, which has never been my strong suit before, but I have a sparked a new interest, I think.
Yes.
Two of the most notable publications that she made were, she translated Newton's Principia Mathematica into French so that Newtonian physics could be developed within French culture.
And accessible to everyone. And they still use her translation in French public schools, I learned.
And then also The Foundations of Physics, which was her creation. And we've been looking for a copy of it in English. We have one in French. But I think the gist of her work in that was kind of furthering her delving into Newtonian mechanics and combining it with Leibniz's ideas on energy and sort of tying the two worlds, theoretical worlds, together in
making
a way
them
that
work
they,
together.
Yeah, making them work together. What she said.
Yeah. We've been talking over each other for about 3 weeks now. So.
Well, I know that I know that Alexandra is playing Emily. Now, what are what? Who are you performing, Charlie?
Voltaire.
Oh, so you are Voltaire.
I am Voltaire.
So you must have had
to... is Voltaire.
is Voltaire, and you must have had to learn something as well, some sort of science-y thing for yours.
He comes at it from a poetical point of view.
Voltaire did himself... One thing I learned in the course of the rehearsal process is he did himself dive into the world of science and physics, and I think... from what I'm pulling from it, he was interested, but his affair and relationship with Emily furthered his passion and his work there. Since he's mostly known for writing plays and operas and philosophy books, and the main point where Emily and Voltaire had a falling out was... when she wanted to weave together Leibniz and Newton's theories, and he wanted to abandon Leibniz, he thought Newton was the pinnacle of our age, as he says in the play.
How much of this is explained so that the general audience can understand? Because you say Newton, and you say this and that, and I'm going, I'm nodding, and I'm going, I don't know, Newton, gravity. Something having to do with gravity.
Well, the delightful thing about the playwright's approach is that you've got the language that is in this poetic style.
It's also modern.
And romantic style of like the time period, France and the Enlightenment. But yeah, but the lexicon, kind of as Alex was saying... as Alexandra was saying.
Yes, thank you. Well, very special and important. But, you know, there'll be a long passage where they're speaking love to each other and you know, debating philosophy and math, and then she'll say, now shut up so I can work. So it's a little bit of modern language, and but the way it's written, it's all there for you. It's, you don't have to care or like about math. I mean, it helps to like math, but you don't have to really enjoy the language of the piece.
And it is a comedy?
It's a drama.
It's a drama.
With
okay.
some funny bits.
With lots of funny, funny bits.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess the reason I was thinking comedy is because it was sent over as being a fast, funny, sexy rediscovery.
I like to think it's funny, but I'm a comedian, so that's where my strengths lie. So I lean on the comedy probably more than another actress would.
And it's super there and thick, but also, right, her defending her life, you know, the play ends with her... This
Don't tell how...
Spoiler alert, America.
Teasers.
Spoilers?
We have to, like, show a little cleavage to the airwaves.
Well, it's your turn, quite frankly.
She shows a lot of cleavage.
Is that
Come on
true?
Out and see my
Yes, it's true.
It's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
Completely stylistically appropriate for the time. And also, yes, I look like the cover of a romance novel, quite frankly.
And so, mm-hmm. again, you're telling me, even if we haven't done our homework before we see the play and we don't, you know, clearly recall Voltaire nor... the other individual, Newton, nor the other one.
Leibniz.
Yes. It will be clear what the differences are between these individuals. It'll be clear. Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, so tell me Leibniz. What's Leibniz about that?
I'm going to be straight with you, America. I had no idea who that was before I read the script. I thought it was a brand of crackers, which it also is.
Mm-hmm.
But... it's more about the relationships of, you know, this person believes this and this person believes this. Well, one of them must be 100% correct and one of them must be just wrong and should be shoved off the edge of the planet. And it's more about that than if you don't understand, you know, F equals MV
right.
squared or...
Well, then ultimately, and I know Newton made figs, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very famous.
Aside from that, and let's... have the director, let's put the director on the spot. What are the main themes here? Or, you know, the things that make these individuals differ from one another as far as thinking? One believes and one believes what?
You want me to talk physics? Really? Force Vive.
Living force.
So Newton believed that energy, when energy ran down, God himself would set it going again. He did not believe in the conservation of matter or the conservation of energy. Leibniz, however, believed in kinetic energy and the conservation of energy. And so he, so when Emily took these two notions and she was able to prove how they actually work together, and that then gave us the work that Einstein and others were able to springboard off of, and that gave us the theory of relativity and the conservation of matter.
And what's notable about what you just said, Newton thought originally that energy was proportional to mass times velocity. Leibniz believed that it was proportional to mass times velocity squared. Now what we know of as Newtonian mechanics is generally seen, Newton is kind of seen as the founder of the theory of conservation of momentum. And so some people mistakenly believe that he also correctly predicted the conservation of energy, but he didn't have the relationship between mass and momentum, force and energy, light, together. And that's where Emily...
And Emily says the line is, maybe God is in the squaring. She sort of stitches the two together. And nobody would have heard it if she hadn't funneled all of that work through Voltaire to the public. So he was sort of the megaphone for her knowledge.
Do you have anything? You have a book in front of you. Before I release you to go and do you have anything, Alex, that that you could perform?
Oh, ooh, what do we like,
from
guys?
That book. You brought the book, so I had to ask.
No reason.
Or the two of you. One of you or the two of you, whichever you think.
I was thinking we should do the scene at the opera. I don't know.
Okay, yeah.
A little quick, some of that quick back and forth we were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do a page.
From the top?
Sure.
Madame Marquise, it is a pleasure to see you and be seen with you.
Oh, we seem to be making a habit of it.
I do love that patisserie. How is your eclair?
Much like you, I'm afraid. Too sweet, not quite filling. How was your tart?
Couldn't stop myself. Speaking of which, you're not bored by my growing infatuation with you?
On the contrary, I think it's good for your health.
My health? You barely know me, madam.
I know your reputation and your work, monsieur.
You do?
Of course I do.
Of course you do.
Many of your operas by heart, though I thought that last one was a bit wordy.
Now you tease.
If honesty is gameplay.
Everything's a move, my dear.
A dear, perhaps, but not yours yet.
I hear a yet.
And yet missed the knot.
My God.
You have one?
Only muses.
They're a fickle bunch.
Madam, you are...
Speak, poet. Anticipation tortures the air.
Alexandra Bluin as Emily, and Charlie Heinberg as Voltaire. Also here was their director, Catherine L. Brown. Emily, La Marquise du Châtelet, defends her life tonight. It's Thursdays through Saturdays at 8 p.m. through March the 4th, with one Sunday matinee on February 26th at 2 p.m. And that's at Redwood Curtain Theater, 220 First Street, Eureka. Tickets and information at 443-7688 or redwoodcurtain.com. I'm Wendy Butler, and thank you for listening. Art Waves is broadcast each Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. Live and archived programs are at khsu.org. And Art Waves podcasts, now available on iTunes.
are listening to KHSU and KHSU HD 90.5 Arcata, KHSR 91.9 Crescent City, and KHSG 89.9 Garberville. Support comes from Arcata Artisans Cooperative Gallery on the Plaza.